I'm pleased to introduce you all, or reintroduce you, to Joshua McKinney. Joshua McKinney is a professor of poetry at Sacramento State University and the author of three books of poetry: Saunter, which was co-winner of the University of Georgia Press Poetry Series Open Competition in 2002, The Novice Mourner, winner of the Dorothy Brunsman Poetry Prize in 2005, and Mad Cursive, just published in 2012. I know that we've talked to Joshua about those earlier books, and so I'm pleased to have an opportunity to have him tell you all about Mad Cursive. Joshua McKinney's poetry has appeared in over 100 national journals, such as American Letters and Commentary, Boulevard, and Colorado Review. His other awards include the Dickinson Poetry Prize and the Gertrude Stein Award for Innovative American Writing. After earning a BA in English and an MA in the teaching of writing and a single subject teaching credential from Humboldt State University, McKinney was accepted as a teaching fellow in the doctoral program at the University of Denver in 1992. McKinney teaches poetry, flash fiction, and eco-poetics at Sacramento State University. He's also an avid practitioner of Japanese sword arts, about which I may ask him more in a moment. Of Joshua McKinney's most recent book, which is called Mad Cursive, Donald Revelle has said Joshua McKinney articulates the mortal grandeur and, this is more poignant than I can rightly say, the tragedy of balance. McKinney simply will not relinquish, either past or present, love or bereavement, intellect or animal anguish, merely to accommodate the shrill urgings of our moment. Mad Cursive is therefore and shall remain a heroic collection. Joshua McKinney is reading tomorrow evening at the John Atsoulis Gallery at 8 o'clock. More information about this event is available at Poetry in Davis. But for right now, Joshua McKinney, welcome back to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thank you very much, Andy. I'm pleased to be back.
Good to have you here. We talked, a number of weeks ago about the fact that you've got this new book out, Mad Cursive, and you'll be reading tomorrow in Davis. For people who might not have heard that conversation, tell me about ways that Mad Cursive is different from your previous books of poetry, Saunter and The Novice Mourner.
Well, Saunter was, as some critics or reviewers characterized it, as elliptical, which I think is just a buzz phrase for difficult postmodern.
Yeah.
My second book, The Novice Mourner, was much more narrative and had almost an entirely different audience. And this third book is kind of a hybrid between those two, I think. My eclecticism is sometimes puzzling to people. But I think this book has both elliptical poems, if you will, and some more straightforward or more mainstream poems, particularly in the narrative vein.
Excellent. Now, when you write narrative poems, are those mostly from the point of view of someone who resembles Joshua McKinney, or do you write persona poems from the points of view of people who are not you at all?
I think there's always a little bit of me in there somewhere. Certainly in The Novice Mourner that was true, but in I often use the third person as a way to give myself some distance and perhaps get myself off the hook in terms of autobiography. But there are a few poems in Mad Cursive that are definitely based on a personal experience.
Terrific.
Quite narrative.
So with some narrative.
Uh-huh.
I've seen you give talks in Sacramento, such as at the Sacramento Poetry Center, about some of the poets who have been influential for you in the way that we've talked about the differing strains or approaches of your different books. There are probably a great number of influences, but who are some of the poets that you find yourself returning to either in formal lectures or when coming up with examples to talk to your students about their poetry or about great poetry?
Well, I just, as it happens, in concluding a course in contemporary American poetry, and one of the poets that always really changes the way that students think about poetry, and he certainly changed the way I thought about it, was the late Robert Creeley. Creeley does things with language that most novice students are not used to seeing done. They think poetry is supposed to behave in a certain way, and Creeley does something entirely different. They're not exactly sure. The language slips and slides, and the reference change, and it's much more an experience of immediacy. The text before them rather than, say, a narrative poem that is almost like, in some ways, watching a film. You have images in your head, and Creeley's poetry, at least some of it that I like to teach, is almost devoid of image.
And that's an interesting approach, to be devoid of image, because we think often as the image being the bedrock, the currency of the modern or postmodern poem.
Yeah, I think we do a lot of times, but I suppose it depends on how you approach it. Creeley said something fairly early in his career about how he was dissatisfied with what a lot of poetry of his, you know, his contemporaries was doing. He said it seemed like a fairly articulate gossip about events that had already occurred. And what Creeley tries to do, it seems to me, and what I would aspire to do in a lot of my work is to make the language function almost as a verb, if I could. Pure verb. Action now, an event, rather than a recounting of an event. Make the poem itself an event.
So to try to represent the immediacy of what we experience when we work our way through this life.
Yeah, exactly. I think, though, that one has to be a little bit careful when putting a book together.
Yeah.
At least I'm mindful of this. I mean, the quality of attention that it takes to read that kind of poetry is a bit exhausting, or can be.
It's interesting in that way how Creeley's approach differs dramatically from, say, Eliot and Pound, who we think of as high modernists, because they were very much interested in representing the mind of Europe and really the history of the mind of Europe in their poetry. History and going back and representing history was certainly very important to them in their major works.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, Europe is an operative word there in your statement, and Creeley, I think, is quintessentially an American poet. And heavily influenced by that great improvisational form of American music, jazz.
Absolutely. It's one of the reasons I play only jazz on this radio show. That and the fact that you don't have to check jazz CDs ahead of time to make sure that people aren't swearing on the tracks, because you encounter
yeah.
that very rarely
yeah.
in jazz music. My guest this afternoon is Joshua McKinney. He's a professor of poetry at Sacramento State University. And he'll be reading from his poetry tomorrow night at the John Atsoulis Gallery. That's at 8 o'clock at 521 First Street, right there at the corner of First and E Streets, at the entrance of the city of Davis, at least downtown Davis. Joshua, we're going to take a quick break to hear a public service announcement, and then when we return, I hope that you'll share with us a poem from your new book, Mad Cursive.
I'll be happy to.
Excellent. Joshua McKinney is my guest this afternoon on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour. He's returning to Davis to read again as part of the Poetry Night reading series. This time around, the reading series takes place exclusively at the John Atsoulis Gallery at 521 First Street in the city of Davis, right there on the first floor. If you'd like to participate or perhaps read something at the open mic, you are invited to come by the gallery around 7:30 or 7:45 tomorrow evening, where there will be opportunities for you to meet the poet, hear poetry by a number of local and Sacramento poets, and especially hear work from this new book by Joshua McKinney called Mad Cursive. Joshua, what poem would you like to share with listeners this afternoon from your new book, Mad Cursive?
I'd like to read a poem that takes its title from its first line, as do a number of poems in this book. It's called She Placed the Form Before Him And.
Great, let's hear it.
She placed the form before him, and he saw that even to die required a name. The space his pen wavered over, the eyes angling upwards, aslant in thought, a call backward as into... She asked him then to take a seat, said, next, as someone else stepped up to take his place. He raised a hand to his face. It felt the same. And then it came, a name he did not expect. It was...
That's terrific.
Yeah. You know, know, we were talking about keeping poems as events, trying to make them as events. And one of the things I've experimented with a number of poems here is just sort of ending abruptly in that way. It seems like a lot of poetry that strives to resist closure can sort of devolve into a kind of non sequitur,
right,
however interesting the language. And so I've experimented a little bit with using some narrative, as in this poem, but ending abruptly, just sort of stopping, dropping off in the middle of a sentence, which, as well as being puzzling when you're doing it over the radio, I think can keep some tension alive in the poem rather than wrapping things up. So maybe a slightly different way of resisting closure.
I remember about 10 years ago, we brought Joshua Clover to campus, a different Joshua. And this was a few years before he was invited to join the faculty at UC Davis. We brought Joshua Clover over from the city of Berkeley to have him give a poetry reading. And my mom from Washington, D.C. happened to be in town. And so she and I attended this reading. And he read a few poems. And then at one point, although the question and answer period had not yet begun, my mom just blurted out, "I don't know when one poem ends and the next one begins." And it's one of those things where, you know, a non-poet might share this. And it's something that, you know, the rest of us who are more experienced poetry readers might note and wrestle with. And Joshua just smiled and he said, "I think you're beginning to get it, ma'am," or some such thing.
And, yeah, it's great to have that kind of honesty in the audience.
Yeah, and rare that it's spoken. But
yeah, most people just nod and say, yes.
Right. So it makes me think about a question that you might already have answered with your earlier remarks, and that is, how do we know when a poem is done? And part of what you're exploring, I guess, is the courage to end it in such a way that the reader is forced to wrestle with the words that have been heard, rather than to wait for the poem to close like the lid of a box, as William Butler Yeats once said.
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And I think I would make a distinction between how does the reader know when a poem is finished and how does the writer, him or herself, know
right
when the poem is finished. And I'm very interested in the latter question. And I often ask it to my more advanced students, and sometimes it stops them cold. And indeed, I've had to think about it a bit myself. But in my own compositional practices, I think it has more to do with the teleology or the route the poem has traveled. Did it get from a point to another point, and how did it get there? In other words, did it move forward? And that doesn't necessarily have to be in a straight line, of course, but that's sort of how I gauge. And, of course, the narrative poem will move forward in a way different from a non-narrative poem and so on. So,
right.
Yeah. Happily, with the type of poems that I write lately, if you're reading them, you know, they have a title and they're fairly short, so there they are on the page with some white space afterwards, and you can sort of tell that, you know, that's over with. But I've had the same experience that your mother had at readings, particularly with one of my mentors, Ben Ramke, whose work I just find amazing. But sometimes you think, oh, that's the end, and then it'll go on. It's a very interesting experience.
Absolutely. And what you say about the white space is important. I remember Philip Larkin talked about this in an interview that I remember hearing, and this is about 25 years ago or so. I can tell you precisely. It was in a class that I took in, called British Poetry Now in the winter and spring of 1987. And we heard this interview, and he talked about how uncomfortable he feels at poetry readings, unless, as you just mentioned, he has the text in front of him as well, because he likes being able to gauge when reading someone else's poem, when the ending is coming. And I guess it's almost a sort of musical comfort that one gains knowing that that things will be resolved in some sort of satisfying way, at least poetically, if not, I mean, many of his poems were about disappointment, if not in the actual topic of the poem.
Well, that's interesting. I suppose from a pedagogical standpoint, you would be addressing two learning channels as opposed to just the auditory. And that is interesting. I've been attending a few readings recently for an anthology that Bob Stanley, the outgoing Sacramento laureate, put together called Late Peaches, 100 Poems by Sacramento Poets. And we're usually sitting there in the audience with our copy so that we can get up and read those contributors. And so I do that. And it's an entirely different experience. It, in some ways, it's very helpful.
Yeah.
As it takes a little pressure off the intense concentration you have to bring to bear at most poetry readings.
And we should take a moment to plug that anthology in which your poetry is found and many other great Sacramento poets. Bob sent me a copy a few weeks ago, and I'll be featuring him in this poetry series here in Davis, I think, in April, which is appropriate for National Poetry Month. But really a great collection of works, Late Peaches.
Yeah, I was so impressed with the overall quality of the work in there and so proud. I have a number of students, past and present, that are in there too. So it's very nice to be able to read with them at some of the venues.
Absolutely. Well, my guest this afternoon is Joshua McKinney. He's the professor of poetry at Sacramento State University. And as we've been talking about, he'll be reading tomorrow evening at the John Itzulis Gallery here in the city of Davis. That's at 8 o'clock, 521 First Street. If you'd like more information, you can visit the website of that poetry series, which is Poetry in Davis. .com. Joshua, it's been a pleasure, as always, to have you join me on the radio this afternoon. I look forward to hearing your work tomorrow and also hearing some of the work of the open mic poets who follow our featured performer.
I look forward to that as well, Andy, and thank you again for having me on your show.
Absolutely. Take care.